Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Metaphysical Hour. Tonight is March the 9th, 2018. I was starting to say 12, and I think it's later than that. 18, really? 18? Oh my goodness, yeah, I think it's the 18th. See, I'm completely, This happens to me every single time. Oh, goodness, this is so crazy. Okay, anyway, but I think I'm Julia Cannon. Yeah, I think that one's right. Some days I really don't know. Okay, date, time, year, me. All right, now, we've established all that, and then what we're doing here. Okay. We have things coming up. We have classes. I'm just going to skim over that very quickly because what we're gearing up for now are conferences and the UFO conference, big time. So we have some classes coming up around the conference, and that's our level one, level three, and level two classes, and they're all bunched up right around it. So if you're of the QHHT classes, so if you're interested at all in those, go to the QHHTofficial.com. website, or DoloresCannon.com website, and you can see all of those, when they're coming and everything and how they're around it. So just go there, and we have all this information on the website, on the Facebook pages. We have it everywhere. You can't miss it. Okay, now our UFO, the Ozark Mountain UFO Conference, or Ozark UFO Conference, whichever way you want to say it, that'll get you there. It's known by either website, either Facebook page. I mean, you can get there. That's coming up. I mean, we're really close. It's April 13th to the 15th. It's always the second weekend of April. Always. It's been that way from the beginning. It never changes. And people call and go, now, when is it? I think it was different before. No, it's not. It's always been and always will be the second weekend in April. There's some things that we will not change, and that's one of them. That way you will always know. The other thing will probably be where it's located. Eureka Springs, Arkansas. That's just, I mean, I don't know of a better place to put it. It's just going to be where it is. So there you go. So it's coming up. I mean, like I said, we're getting really close. So that's where we're doing what we're doing. And this is our 31st year. Can you believe it? Oh, my goodness. This is, I think, outside of, there's maybe one other in the country that's probably giving us a run for the money as far as longest running UFO conferences in the country. So the oldest, you know, whatever you want to call it, the oldest, longest running. I like the longest running. That sounds good. So we kept trying to be the competitor for the biggest, and it's like, oh, we got tired of trying doing that one. So I like the longest running. That's marathon sounding. You know? Yeah, we've got fortitude. Okay, so that's what we're doing, and this is wonderful, and I thought it would be a great way to kick off to really start going into bringing in and introducing and whatever, blah, 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 I can't talk, start promoting and everything for the conference is the man who knows everything about the conference. He's been there forever. And my gosh, you're probably, we could probably call you, I mean, what they're showing me is this, is this cog. It's like you're this integral part. You have been within the workings, the inner workings of this. What you guys don't know is, I know this is an audio show, but we have video going here, and so I can do all this. We can make faces at each other. And he's making faces at me going, what? What are you doing? I'm a cog? What? And anyway, so let me just go ahead and bring him in so that way he can talk while he's making these goofy faces. I love this guy. Absolutely, he is the personality of the show. I mean, I wish we had Laugh-O-Vision here. So, and I'm going to have him tell some stories. One, we're going to go over, you know, our speakers, because he knows like everybody, and he has like stuff to tell about a lot of these speakers that are here, and he has old stuff because he grew up with a lot of them. You know, he was there when they were coming in and stuff, and then he has a lot of stories of his own to tell as he was coming through and stuff. And then we were talking. Oh, that's what I was going to tell us. We had a show before the show. I mean, my gosh, we already did the show a while ago. I'm sorry you guys weren't here to join us. it was really great. I hope we remember what we talked about so we can kind of bring some of it back. But it was wonderful. And everybody's saying, well, you stop talking and just bring him on, and then maybe he can say something and you can stop. And this is what I do. I just blabber. So, but you're used to that, right? Because that's what I do at the conference. And he's like trying to push me off the stage. And that's what I do anyway. So without further ado, our MC of the conference, and here's another one. It's the tradition. He has been the long time. He hasn't always been, but he has been probably, you can tell everybody how long you've been and when it started and how it kind of came to. But as far as I'm concerned, you have been for the better part, and you will be the MC of the UFO conference, the Ozark UFO conference. Forrest Crawford. Welcome, Forrest. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Julia. Thank you for having me and all the kind words. And I'm very, very proud to carry on the tradition of being the MC. I'm glad you guys are happy with my tomfoolery. And it's an honor to carry on, you know, for Lou, for Dolores, and to be a part. I spent a number of years giving speeches, and I'm not as active in the field research these days, you know, more kind of behind the scenes. And so it's still a chance for me to get up and act up a little bit and have some fun and be a part of the conference. So I appreciate that. I think the first one I came to was 89, I think. It was either, and I can't remember if it started in 87 or 88.
88.
I was at
the first one. Yeah. It was 88.
I think I came to 89, mm-hmm. And I think I've only missed three or four since. And for a long time I spoke. It's kind of nice to not do that because there's a lot goes behind that that people don't really realize whenever you get up and talk and you're giving that, and it's something that I respect the speakers and the researchers that get up and share what they do, because there's very few people in this field that are making much money off of it. Most people don't try and make much money off of it. If you're a good enough writer and you publish some of your research, and you might make some money off of some books and things, but most people don't start out thinking, hey, I'm going to get rich off being a UFO researcher. And it gets inside of you, and you do it because you kind of have no choice. It's like a compulsion that becomes a part of your life, and obsession is also a good word. And you do it because it's a part of you, and you feel a need to. And so it's, you know, there's this kind of giving devotion that most people don't think about when they're looking at a speaker standing up there, that what really goes behind it, and how much of their life goes into it. So I applaud Annie and all of the speakers that come to this conference and get up and share their research. And they all have my respect and my gratitude. And I was a kid back in the day. I claim to be a UFO researcher starting when I was 13, and people go, oh yeah, right. But when I was 13, I started collecting books on the subject. That was 1971. By the time I was 16, I had 250 books on the subject. I gave my first speech whenever I was 17, at the UFO Study Group in St. Louis on propulsion theory and detection methods. And, you know, so I was a kid carrying stuff for all these cool UFO guys, you know, back really in the beginning of the you know, public science of this thing. It was not uncommon for people like Dr. J. Allen Hynek to show up at a monthly meeting because he lived in Chicago and St. Louis wasn't that far away, and everybody just kind of hung out. So that's kind of why I'd become this person kind of behind the scenes, just, you know, with my finger in everything, so to speak, just because I kind of grew up, you know, knowing everybody and being fortunate enough to learn from the old timers in the field. And now, unfortunately, I'm one of the old timers in the field. It's like, oh no. So, it's just been a fantastic, ride. So in of all the conferences I've been to anywhere in the country, my all time favorite, hands down, has always been the Ozark UFO conference. And for a lot of reasons, not just, it's a combination of the location, because it's so beautiful and special. Like Eureka Springs is just this amazingly cool place. Aside from being just beautiful and this just artistic community, it probably sits on top of just a giant crystal filled cave with running water, you know. So, you know, from a spiritual standpoint, it's like one of the most energetic places that you'd ever want to go to. And then it just seems to, it's kind of out of the way. And so in a way, it draws sort of a more special crowd, a more dedicated crowd maybe. And so it always has had a different feel than any of the other UFO conferences out there. And there's some great conferences out there, don't get me wrong. Like the UFO, the International UFO Congress out in Nevada, fantastic conference. The MUFON Symposium, I think that's the only one that's older. MUFON Symposium started in 69, I think. And it's been running continuously ever since. It might be that one probably is the longest running UFO conference out there.
I knew it was a MUFON one, but didn't remember which one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there's some really good conferences that have run in California and in the Northeast for that matter for years. But I think the Ozark has got the number two place sewn up as far as continuously going on, and it just has an amazing, you know, feel to it. And when I first started doing this, like when I first went to college, I was a physics major. And to give you an idea how this gets inside of you, and I think last year I told more of my story, but the short version of that is I saw something land about 100 yards away from me or so whenever I was 10 years old. And so that piqued my curiosity. And I got involved, like I say, when I was 13 years old. My career choice, at least at that time, to be a physicist was based on wanting to figure out how UFOs flew. Okay, so even my career choice was influenced by this phenomenon. And at first, at least back in that day, in the mid-70s or whatever, I was very, very nuts and bolts. As well was the whole science of ufology. It was pretty nuts and bolts at the time. The abduction phenomenon was pretty new. Mm-hmm. You know, Betty and Barney Hill was just in the 60s. It's overflowing into the 70s. We had the abduction phenomenon was kind of new. But like you and I were talking earlier, one of the things that this science has evolved so quickly, mm-hmm. and so much over the last 35 or 40 years that can you look back on it and go, oh, my gosh, we've come a long way. Mm-hmm. And we're in the process of making some big steps forward now, which I'll talk about a little bit because this is showing up in the speakers that are coming this year. But back in the day, it was, let's go out and measure the burn spot. I know there's some indentations. Let's take some samples and see if they're radioactive. And, you know, very, very nuts and bolts research. And the abduction phenomenon was really very mysterious. And our view of it was very simplistic back then compared to what it is now. And that has evolved to the point where we have a completely different understanding of the contact side of this phenomenon. And even you know, your more prosaic scientist types have moved to look at the contact and abduction phenomenon very, very differently these days. So you would see this every year in the speakers at the Ozark Conference. And like I was kind of telling you before, is Lou used to, early on when I started speaking, I would speak every year at the conference. And I was doing a lot of research. I always had new stuff to talk about. And I'm not the kind of researcher that will give a speech just to hear myself talk, you know, as much as I like to talk. It's always kind of like I always kind of looked at other researchers and go, you're not saying anything new. You just want to hear yourself talk, you know, and get a free plane ticket. I, you know, I'm not trying to criticize really harshly the people that do that, because it's fun to be able to move around the world and share your research. But I think that you should be doing things new and trying to move the phenomenon along. So I wouldn't talk if I didn't have anything new to say. So Lou would call me up in the fall, you know, before Christmas, and go, what are you talking about this year? And I go, I got nothing, Lou. I'm not going to talk this year. And he goes, oh yeah, you are. I go, no, really. I haven't nothing new. I'm not going to talk. And he would hold a speaker slot open for me. And then sometime between like November, December, January, something would happen and things would just kind of come together. And I go, oh, this would be really cool to talk about. I call Lou up and I go, hey, I got something. He goes, I knew it. And so that was fun, a fun process for me. But then when I would get to the conference, I would realize that the other speakers that were coming with information similar, or at least it would dovetail onto like what I was talking about, and it would just fall together. Because what most people wouldn't realize is that we don't necessarily talk to each other regularly. We in fact, UFO researchers rely on conferences to hang out with their friends. You know, and unless you live in close proximity to somebody, you don't get to see each other very often. You know? So I wouldn't call up and go, hey, I'm talking about art and UFOs, you know, and musical, you know, artists and you know, what are you talking about? Oh, yeah, I'll throw something like that in. We don't do that. We show up and we talk and go, oh, my God, we're all talking about the same thing. Mm-hmm. And so that was part of this, like, mystery that would happen at the Ozark conference. I can't say for sure whether it did or didn't happen at other conferences, but it always happened at the Ozark conference. And so there would be this, you know, kind of a theme that would bubble up out of it. And for lack of a better term, it was like, that's what the universe wanted us to talk about. You know, it was just this kind of weird thing. So over the years, I became much less nuts and bolts and much more, paranormal, spiritual, as well as hanging on to the nuts and bolts approach to it as well. And I think it's very, very important that we do that, that we keep opening ourselves up to the different layers of this phenomenon as it presents itself. Because it really is, part of it is us discovering this, and part of it is it letting us discover it. Okay. It's all, and I'll tell a little story that relates to that.
I like that. I like you saying that, because that's really important, I think.
I do too. And through personal experiences, I came to believe this, and that of others as well. But mm-hmm. whenever I was younger and I was in scouts, I camped a lot. I saw lots of UFOs. And it used to be if people go, oh, have you ever seen one? And I'd go, yeah, I've seen one, you know, that was okay. But if I said, yeah, well, I saw 30 of them, they were like, oh, get out of here, you're crazy. Mm-hmm. But I could explain to you why. I mean, I literally stopped counting around 250, and I've seen some since then. I have no idea. Mm-hmm. And so are things. Now, remember, I trained myself early on to recognize all phenomenon that is or is not explainable. So I would consider myself an expert. I put it that way. You have to be. If you're going to be a good UFO researcher, you've got to know about military aircraft and weather phenomenon and natural phenomenon, and so that you can – because really what we want to talk about is alien stuff. I don't care about swamp gas. I want to talk about aliens. You know, I don't care about experimental aircraft, mm-hmm. You know, unless we got them from aliens. Then it becomes interesting. You know? So,
yeah, we were talking about that earlier too.
So it's really not, UFO researchers don't want everything to be about aliens, but everything that we talk about, we want to be about aliens. So we have to spend plenty of time eliminating everything else, you know. Mm-hmm. So even back whenever I was in scouts, whenever I was a teenager, I was seeing things. I'd go camp. Missouri was an absolute hot proactivity. It always has been. Mm-hmm. It's been in the top 10 states for reported sightings forever. And at the time, since there was, you know, a lot of research going on out of the Midwest, I became acquainted with Dr. Harley Rutledge, who was out of Southeast Missouri State College. He was the physics professor down there. And he was a UFO researcher. He's dead now. But he was around for years and years, and he was involved in a lot of the investigative work that went on around Piedmont, Missouri back in the day. There was a lot of stuff going on. And I had many, many conversations with him on the phone. And I told him about a time whenever I was laying on a creek bed with some other scouts and my best friend, and we stayed up and we were watching the sky and we were seeing strange things. And we basically, if you want to watch the whole sky, you need about four people so you can kind of lay head to head, and you take one fourth of the sky, I'll take this fourth of the sky, and you watch, you know, for things moving around. And so then if I saw something strange, I would direct everybody's attention over to my quadrant, you know. Mm-hmm. And when we were doing that one night, we realized that two or three times that I would literally like got a feeling to look over here in the other guy's quadrant, which you're not supposed to do. And as I'm turning to look, I realize that the other three guys that are doing this with me are all turning and looking at the same time. And we look, and here's this blue, star-like object, but it's moving back and forth and stopping and going up and down and doing all kinds of weird stuff. Mm-hmm. And we realize, like, wait a minute, how did you know to look over there? I don't know. I just had a feeling, you know? So I'm having this discussion with Harley Rutledge, and I tell him this experience, and I said, it's as if they knew we were looking. And he says, I'll take it one step further, because he'd spent many more hours on the field than I had at that point. He said that he came to the conclusion that we wouldn't see them unless they wanted us to. Yeah. Okay, that's the next level. You know, not only were we sensing them, they knew we were looking, but they wanted us to look. Now, that adds a level to this phenomenon that certainly back in the 70s, nobody wanted to talk about. Okay, and that gets back to what I just said, is that not only are we going through our own discovery process, but what we're looking at is either helping or hindering that process also. There's a two-way involvement here. And that's really, really important to understand if you want to get to the bottom of this thing. You can't just think, well, I'm going to go out there and measure this like traditional science, so I'm going to figure out the answer. No, you're not. You're not. It's a combination of a personal journey and a scientific journey together. And unfortunately, over the years, there's been a fair amount of researchers that they're unwilling to admit to that personal side. And they stay very, you know, nuts and bolts and very pragmatic. And there's nothing wrong with that, because that's good science. But at the same time, there's certain things that they're going to miss. Unfortunately, this certainly happened a lot in the abduction phenomenon early on. People made up their mind about what it was or wasn't. And so then they produced a lot of research that backed up that hypothesis. And if you're a scientist at all, you know that that's bad science if all you do is find data that proves your hypothesis and reject all the rest of the data. So, you know, you're going through your science with blinders on. Mm-hmm. But it's hard and it's very scary to stay open-minded. So I'm real happy with the list of speakers this year, because there is something happening there's two major things happening in the broader world, okay? And then there is this other undercurrent that's been happening in ufology for a number of years, and all three of these things are evident in the speakers that we're going to have this year, so it's really cool.
Okay, let's talk about that. They're all colliding, aren't they?
coalescing. Yeah, colliding. Yeah. Such an ugly word.
So what do you see happening?
One of the biggest topics that is going to come out of, that'll come out of this conference and will continue to kind of be talked about is, I guess it was, a month or so ago, 2 months ago, there was this release of this gun camera footage from our military saying, yes, look, we were tracking this UFO, and here's the gun camera footage. Now, you know, some people might think, well, what's the big deal? Well, I can tell you what the big deal is. Our military doesn't release that kind of information ever under any circumstances. Period. It's not like somebody who might have a cell phone in the Gulf War and they film some stuff and put it out over the web. Now, yeah, that's possible these days with our technology. But gun camera footage off of a fighter jet, nobody gets their hand. That's not something like, here, you want a copy, you know, go show your friends.
That's like classified. That's real. That's real stuff. Yeah.
Like, not only is it highly classified, but it's the kind of evidence that is virtually impossible to get your hands on because it is created and used within a very, very controlled system, you know. It's not like there's a box of that laying around somebody can grab a tape. You know, so whenever that happened, that has caused a big stir in the world. Oh my God, does this mean disclosure? Mm-hmm. And the word disclosure is a big word in ufology. It's what all UFO researchers hope will happen is that the government or the governments of the world will finally fess up and tell us what's going on and that they know all about it and inform us. Okay, let me, I'll forward an opinion, okay? I've had this opinion for a long time. I think it is a gallant effort of a lot of the researchers who are hammering our government to release information, okay? And a lot of information has come out, okay? But it literally is like squeezing a turnip for blood. You know, you're not going to get much. And I'll very, very simply explain why I think that is. The government's job and the military's job, the military industrial complex's job is not in any way to educate the public. That's not their job. We don't give them tax money to teach us about weapon systems and about military strategy and about defense networks. We give them money so that we can go out and buy an extra Blu-ray player and have gas in our car and a snowblower up here in the Northeast. For God's sake, you got to have one of those. And we can go down and get whatever kind of groceries we want at the store, and nobody's going to shoot us. Okay, that's what we pay them for. That's what their job is. They don't have a huge, educational network. Their job is not to alarm us in any way. In fact, it's the opposite. Mm-hmm. So if you go to them now, there's a difference. There's the public at large, and then there's the devoutly interested UFO people. Okay, you and I could go, and we could handle whatever they told us.
Right.
They do not in any way believe that the public at large should handle the truth, even that we're not alone in the universe. That's a fairly simple premise. Right. Not alone in the universe. Mm-hmm. Okay. It would shift our social and cultural thinking so radically that it would be hard to predict how society would change with this information. And futurists will tell you this. There's three big things are called mega levers. And a mega lever is a change great enough that the outcome can no longer be predicted. But, you know, our think tanks, we have mathematicians and actuaries that work with government, and all they try and do is figure out every possible way this could turn out so they can guide the situation to the best possible outcome. Well, these are things that are so big that if they happen, they can't predict the outcome. One is Christ returns, World War III, and aliens have landed. Those are the three big mega levers.
Wow. Okay.
So take into consideration, why would our government tell us something that could mess up our thinking and our behavior so badly they don't have any idea what's going to happen? It's not going to happen. The government is not going to tell us what they know about aliens until they have no choice, and that's going to be like multiple sustained landings in highly populated areas with full media coverage where, oh crap, I guess we can't deny this anymore. Which means the aliens have changed their agenda because they've been doing a pretty good job of sneaking around for thousands and thousands of years. Certainly in modern times. I don't think they snuck around as much a couple thousand years ago.
Right.
But nowadays they sneak around pretty well. Okay. So the aliens would have to say, one or more of the races, whatever, would have to say, okay, it's time to make contact. And then all bets are off. That's it. All bets are off. Mm-hmm. So, and I know some of our speakers, Grant, Richard, you know, Cameron, Richard Dolan, Mark D'Antonio, Linda, Nick Redfern, Chase Klotsky. All of them are going to be talking about this phenomenon. It's this phenomenon that have things changed now that the U.S. government has allowed gun camera footage to come out? Because other governments have in years past, like Belgium, you know. This is new, that it's us. So, like, right. I always thought the U.S. would be the last country to admit anything. You know, it's easy. Let the Chinese or the Russians or, you know, let somebody else do it. And then maybe we'll jump on later when we have no choice. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of energy behind this idea of, does this mean disclosure is coming? And whether that's yes or no doesn't matter, because it's causing a phenomenon of consciousness around this idea. Now, other thing, like what Mark D'Antonio is going to be talking about is exoplanets. Okay, here's the other thing that you're seeing happen right now. A lot of information coming out about NASA, the space program, from the past. You know, did we see things on the moon that were alien related? Are there things on Mars that are alien related, including possible ancient civilizations there? Not, you know, along with maybe life now. Some of the moons of Jupiter and Saturn, and we got the telescope looking out there, and it wasn't 20 years ago. It would be like, wow, I hope we find one Earth-like planet out there.
Right.
Today, we know that we're over 5,000 M-class planets identified in what we would call the neighborhood, you know, within 60 to 100 light years. Okay. Guess where all these aliens come from? Almost all of them that have forwarded this information through contact are coming from in the neighborhood. They're all within, you know, 30, 40, 50 light years out. And now we're just picking out, you know, potential planets with life out there every day. Okay. So right now there's this, the scientific focus is on, you know, hey, wait a minute. We're probably not alone. So now the question isn't, you know, there's probably life all over the place out there, but is it really intelligent? So you see, it's like this little step at a time. You know, it's like, well, maybe there's aliens out there, but they can't get there. They can't get here from there. Bull hockey, okay? You're looking at a star system that's been around a million years longer than us, with planets that could sustain life. There's no logical argument that wouldn't say that they have figured stuff out way past we have, you know. And getting around out there might not be nearly as hard as we think. You know, eventually we're going to put these pieces together if we haven't already.
Exactly. And
so now that's what I'm getting at is you've got these two focuses are like the scientific community looking out into space going, holy crap, okay? And another segment of community looking at the government going, you guys know something. Why won't you tell us? And it's this age where we're just trying to squeeze every secret out of, you know, everything. And then, you know, so those are the two kind of socially facing topics that are going to be really, really hot at the conference. And just couldn't have better speakers talking about that. Mm-hmm. You know, from the technical side with Stanton Friedman talking about how, yes, we can really travel, you know, to distant stars. And he's a physicist. He's been very involved in this research over the years. Mark D'Antonio, like I said. And then Linda, oh my gosh, Linda Moulton Howe. I don't think anybody ever in the science of this phenomenon has developed a network and the type of relationships with a person that we like to call the whistleblower. What a terrible label, but you know, it's the whistleblower, and it's kind of a nasty term, but it's accurate. It's there are so many people. This is the thing. People think, well, the government can keep secrets. Nah, no, they can't. They really cannot. Okay, they can keep stuff very well. You know, and military bases are heavily protected. You know, you and I can't just hop a fence and go in there and go, look, there's the alien bodies. You know, But the military is run by people. It's not run by robots. And people talk. And all of us have friends or relatives. Every UFO researcher out there has their little pocket, their little black book of friends in the military, you know, intelligence community. And this is a very profound topic. People cannot keep quiet about it. Our job is to sift through the information and try and understand what's, you know, what's true. But everybody has these contacts. And Linda has such a tremendous network of whistleblowers, people that are just dying to tell, but you got to tell it to the right person, especially if you're trying to make a difference. And so whistleblowers come out of the woodwork and they'll tell you good stuff to try and help you go down the right path. They will also come out of the woodwork and tell you falsities and lies because they're trying to muddy what you're doing. Okay. So that's another thing that makes the UFO researcher's job so hard. Mm-hmm. It's trying to, you know, separate the wheat from the chaff, so to speak. And, but more and more people are coming out of the woodwork, speaking from their deathbeds, you know, and talking about this stuff. And it's not one person that has an interesting story. It's 50 of them that have a story that overlaps and shares details and can't possibly be made up, you know. So the information is starting to leak out all over the place at the same time.
It's like it's a timing thing. It's like the time has come. Let it out.
Malcolm Gladwell. I love Malcolm Gladwell. The tipping point, you know, have we reached the tipping point? That's really the question here. Because from a UFO research standpoint, you know, I don't think that we completely know what's going on, and we may never, but we certainly know about 1,000 times more than we did 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. And to the point now where we can make some assumptions, you know, where if we're pretty sure these things are true, then that means this other thing has to be true. You know what I mean? And so you can kind of do some logic, and that helps focus your attention on where you should be looking and what you should be asking. And so that accelerates our learning process. It also accelerates breaking down the door process, you know. So I would like to think that we're at a tipping point, and that things are going to just kind of continue to expand and explode. And I don't know, you know, I hope people don't get too nervous if they find some of this stuff out. but there's some pretty extraordinary claims floating around out there right now. And I once said this about John Lear. If you remember, John Lear had come out with some really extraordinary UFO material back in the mid to late 80s. And I remember us debating over the, I mean, just, you know, underground bases with like giant tubes with alien babies growing in them, and just, you know, really, really, you know, it's when a lot of the Dulce, New Mexico stuff first came out, and just the crazy stuff you ever want to hear. And I remember us having a discussion about this study group, and I said, let's stop for a minute. If only 10% of this is true, it's still the most extraordinary stuff we've ever heard. Mm-hmm. Okay. So like, let's keep an open mind and let's try and figure out what's true and what's not, you know. And over time, more and more of this information comes out, you know, you start getting a bigger picture forming, you know. Mm-hmm. But now is kind of the same thing. If we need to, you know, think about, like, you know, because the subjects that are coming up now is, has our government had a secret space program for years where we're watching the shuttle go up, and that's almost a diversion, while we've actually got interstellar craft flying around the solar system and a base on Mars and the moon, and this has all been going on, you know, completely under the curtain, so to speak. Mm-hmm. Well, that's pretty extraordinary stuff. What if it's true? Okay. You know, same thing with, what if we know that there's, you know, alien civilization on Mars now or in the past, and there's architectural evidence of that right there. There's those kind of stories, like, wait a minute, we figured out anti-gravity and we've been flying around out there, but nobody knows about it. Okay, that's, you know, we also figured out time travel. We also figured out teleportation. But nobody knows that. What if it's all true? Mm-hmm. What if only a little bit is true? That's the thing.
Exactly.
don't throw it all out. You know, we might be surprised how much of it's really, really true. So, now, the other part of the speakers, this third part that I haven't really talked about is Tricia McCannon, Donna Lynn, Nancy Tremaine are going to be talking about the other aspect of this thing, which is this very, very personal connection to alien contact or abduction or whatever. And what I find interesting about several of these speakers is them talking about like starting out living in fear and then realizing that they were a part of the phenomenon that was going on. Because I can tell you back in the day when I was doing a lot more abduction research, some of the more famous abductees that were out there, their experiences were very much based in fear. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, several of these people became good friends of mine, and I was actually able to do some hypnosis with them as well, but to do it in a different way, you know, to ask questions differently. And we can talk about hypnosis some other time, but mm-hmm. I was a pretty good hypnotherapist back in the
day. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Well, look at you. You are a surprise a minute.
You know what? I can change the tire on a car, too. I dare you to find me a 22-year-old that can do that these days. Now I'm sounding old. All right. What I found out was, or what I was able to help these folks realize, mm-hmm. was that that they weren't really afraid, that they were cooperating, that they had volunteered, that they were related, okay? So.
And where have you heard that before?
it was before your mom wrote the book. Mm-hmm. Your mom's book, The Third Wave of Volunteers and the New Earth. If anybody out there listening, if you haven't bought and read this book, do it tonight. Read it. And go, oh my gosh, some of you will read it and go, you know, you'll have this epiphanal experience and realize this has happened to you. Some of you will read it and go, this is the biggest load of horse manure I've ever heard. And if you do, then put it away and read it again in a couple of years and see if you feel the same way, because I can tell you in 1976, if you would have told me that I would have been selling this book, I'd have said, you're out of your mind. Okay. But through research and personal experiences, I think that your mom's book is one of the most profound tomes of wisdom on this particular part of the subject. Because it gives you a peek at, and what's interesting is your mom wasn't going after alien information.
No.
This is what was coming through, and there was so much of it, she had to put it all together. Okay. So it wasn't like she was looking, you know, she wasn't trying to prove a hypothesis. It was just coming through. And mm-hmm. what it shows is that you talk about this peek behind the curtain to see the Wizard of Oz back there of what's really going on here. And what it really, really comes down to is that we are not really any different than the aliens that we are trying to study. We are as alien as they are, if you want to put it that way. And that doesn't mean that we were dropped off. It gets weirder than that, okay? the first premise you have to go on is maybe it's okay to reincarnate. You know, we got multiple lives, all right? I personally believe that, but, you know, whatever. But take that as a premise and people are choosing to be born here from alien civilizations to be part of something that's going on. Mm-hmm. And that they spend a large chunk of their life potentially waking up to that understanding and remembering who they were and what they're doing here. And that can happen in a lot of different attitudes. And it is more of a pervasive theme throughout the world of UFO research than many people would care to admit. Okay. Those three talking about that aspect of it, about this really, this much like higher spiritual purpose in this, you know, I don't know how to, a much bigger thing. It's not just aliens coming down here and poking us and prodding us because we're interesting, which there's probably plenty of that going on. Okay. But there's something much bigger going on than just that.
There's a reason for it happening.
Yes. 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 But again, I'm not going to discount
there's the bigger reason for it happening.
There, I think that our planet's pretty popular. I mean, you know, that's the other thing is people go, oh, how many aliens could possibly be visiting us? Well, my research with abduction stuff alone, I would tell you that there's probably about 15 different gray races, just gray races, 15 different ones. And that doesn't count humans and reptilians and insectoids and all these other just myriad of different kinds of beings that are being described. And not just described by one person, but thousands of people out there. You know, this is not, you know, there's enough corollary evidence. Okay. So I think that we're a very popular planet from, hey, let's go check out those crazy earthlings like tourism to let's go check on our mission specialist that volunteered to be born on Earth into this rich family so they can aspire to a political position and help change things. Okay. Mm-hmm. Everything in between. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm good, bad, and ugly. Mm-hmm. So it would be very, very interesting to hear these three ladies at the conference talking about that as well. So I'm looking forward to that. You cannot move forward in this phenomenon without entertaining that part of the phenomenon. So it's going to be a good conference.
and I am so excited to see that shifting, because that's what we were talking about earlier, was like you said, the nuts and bolts, that's how it was earlier. And then I was gradually seeing that shifting happening, because, you know, mom was always into this aspect. This is what all the information she was always getting. And then we would go to these UFO conferences and it was all this nuts and bolts, and we would be talking about this other side and it was just glazed eyes and going right over the heads, and it was just okay. But little by little, I could see it was starting to happen. And now it's just, oh, it's wonderful. Last year, wasn't the conference, that was so wonderful. The conference last year, it was huge. It was major what was happening there. Yes. And then now, like you said, here it is.
It's hard. It's hard for nuts and bolts researchers to talk about it. For one, you can talk about it if it's somebody else's case, like, you know, you're working with somebody else. It's very hard for people to talk about it if it's their own personal experience, because it's kind of weird to think that, like, people might think I'm going to be ridiculed. To some extent, it might be true. I mean, you know, it's one of these, like, if you're looking to a researcher to be a very, you know, objective, you know, reporter of data, and then you find out that they're really being driven by deep personal agenda that they may or may not be aware of, right. And that doesn't necessarily invalidate their information.
Exactly.
But it changes the way you may judge them. I hate that word, but, you know, the way that you may judge them. Okay. I've always been, I guess in some ways I've had a unique position as a researcher. I've never had a profession or a tenure that I needed to protect. Mm-hmm. Okay. So I've always tended to speak my mind and expect others to do the same. And that's kind of that's a harsh measure to hold some people to, especially the people who have academic and professional positions that they need to protect. Because the population is not very forgiving. Right. I understand it, but there has to be a shift, because it's the only way. And I'm speaking of this from my personal journey, you know, as a hey, this is cool, let's see if we can figure it out, to having just some of the strangest things you can ever imagine happen to me, you know, throughout this process is part of what I learned, but also part of what I've experienced. And I've always liked self-examination, you know, like I find that fascinating, you know, throw me in front of a Myers-Briggs test any day, you know, or one time at the job that I used to work at, I worked with a group of supervisors, and our our boss sent all four of us to the psychiatric firm to have us like psych profiled and mm-hmm. IQ tested and all this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And it was part of this, like, you know, developing team dynamics and all that kind of corporate crap, you know. And I was like, oh, this is cool. And the other three guys were scared out of their mind. I was like, I love this stuff. And we went through 2 days of tests, and I loved every minute of it. I couldn't get enough of it. That scares the crap out of most people. Mm-hmm. You know? So I don't know. I guess
to have that thing analyzed, yeah.
Well, I guess I tried to be self-honest. Mm-hmm. You know, over years. And, you know, you have to, if you don't incorporate what's happening to you into this, then you're just going to miss so much stuff. And it's the downfall of traditional science anyway. You know, traditional science has always believed I can measure the world around me without influencing it. That's absolute bullcrap. Even the scientists at the, you know, CERN Super Collider right now are realizing this. That our thoughts influence matter at a subatomic level, and right. they don't know how to deal with it. Okay, they really don't. They're struggling with this, but they came to the conclusion, you know, God love them, that was what was happening, and now it's that finally we're hitting that border that says, how do we incorporate consciousness into reality? Where do they meet, and what's the influence? And that's cool. That's very exciting that we're at that precipice in understanding. You know, when they talk about the Higgs boson, the God particle kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what is going to be found to be that missing link in the understanding, is that consciousness is the component that they can't figure out. And where consciousness interacts with that energy field is, you know, whenever you start getting things manifesting and popping in and out of reality and time, and you know, it's all going to come down to, oh crap, we're doing this with our own minds. Oh no,
absolutely.
That's a lovely.
And we've only been saying that how long? You know, yeah, we're manifesting everything. We're the ones doing everything. How about that?
Well, let me on that note, I want to quote my favorite musical group of all time, which is the Moody Blues. These guys were highly, highly spiritual. They were all, by the way, contactees. And they won't talk about it in public, but there are some people in the UFO community that know them and know, you know, that they've had this lifelong involvement, and they write about it in their songs. And there's one of their lyrics that says, a curtain rises on a scene. There stands an actor who is me. Okay. And it's, they're talking about, you know, this curtain of reality of life, you know, and that, you know, coming to the realization that you're an actor
right.
in this reality, but it's right. no more real than going to the movies and watching a movie, you right. know, being an actor in a movie, you're playing a part. And then when you die and you leave here, you're going to go play another part someplace else. Mm-hmm. And that kind of a, you know, a realization is going to be hard for a lot of people, you know, but
it's also, if they can really wrap their heads around it, I mean, at first it may be hard, but if they can really, really wrap their heads around it, it is so empowering.
Right.
Because then you realize you are the lead actor, hopefully, not a supporting actor. You are the lead actor in your play, and you are the script writer. You're the director. You're the right. producer. You're doing all of it now. You are yep. the one running the show. It's your play.
Right.
Do it. Right. Write it. Go. Yeah,
what if you come to realize that you're acting out a script that before you got here, you know? Mm-hmm. And actually, the full yeah. quote is, a curtain rises on a scene with someone chanting to be free. A play unfolds before my eyes. There stands the actor who is me. That's the full quote.
Fantastic. Yeah. Oh, well, real quick, before we go, if somebody wanted to reach you, to contact you or anything, do you have a way for them to do that?
Yeah, I can give you an email address, which is okay. bluefeatherforest. So it's all one word, bluefeatherforest, forest with one R, at gmail.com.
Okay.
And that'll put you my way.
Fantastic. Forest, this has been wonderful. Thank you so much for being here. And everybody, if you want to meet Forrest, you got, you know, you know where you can come and meet him. The Ozark UFO Conference, for one.
Come on. Tell me your story.
Absolutely. It's always a blast. And thank you again.
Oh, you're welcome, Julianne. See you in a couple weeks.
Absolutely. Okay. Thank you, everyone, for being here. And we'll see you very, very soon. And I'll be back next week. Love you.